jede Tür soll eine Fuge sein. An jeder Tür soll eine Fuge sein. So kommt der Wind herein. Wind herein. Wind herein. An jeder Tür soll eine Fuge sein. Eine Fuge sein. An jeder Tür soll eine Fuge sein. Eine Fuge sein.
Die Türe sang nach Mitternacht vom Neuanfang. Bin aufgewacht. Lass dich nicht ein auf Sehers Macht, auf was im Kommen sei. Und die Stimmen der Betroffenen schwingen sich auf zu Zukunftsoffenem. Trunken, nüchtern, die Besoffenen, Bierdosen rollen vorbei. Wege schwind viel Wind hinein, vergiss die Fügung in ein Eins. An jeder Tür soll eine Fuge sein, so kommt der Wind herein. Wir fragten nach Zeichen, sie wurden gesandt. Aus Geburt wurden Leichen, Hochzeiten verbrannt. Doch das Bild der Vergangenheit hat keinen Bestand. Es huscht vorbei. Ungefügige Türen im Wind singen windige Lieder, das himmlische Kind. Die Zeit steht ein, wenn wir unruhig sind und aus der Reihe. Wege schwind viel Wind hinein, vergiss die Fügung in ein Eins. An jeder Tür sollen viele Fugen sein, so kommt der Wind herein. Füg die Teile zusammen und es macht sie nicht ganz. Blas ihnen den Marsch, bleibst doch nur Ordonnanz. Alle liebenden Herzen erscheinen zum Tanz und sie ziehen vorbei. Wege schwind viel Wind hinein, vergiss die Fügung in ein Eins. An jeder Tür soll eine Fuge sein, da kommt die Liebe rein. von der Unmund zum Ungefüge.
Sorry, we'll do it again. In humanist and medievalist discourses, the 12th and 13th centuries have long been described as the period of an early Renaissance, but also as the age of a first enlightenment. The philosophical developments of the Arab world and their translations into Latin created a climate in Europe that allowed the sciences to flourish. And with that, the institutional development of law schools, medical schools, cathedral schools, and eventually universities. This first enlightenment reached Europe not least through Al-Andalus, through translation assemblages in Toledo and elsewhere. But what if this first enlightenment, the movements of the 12th and 13th centuries, and not only them, were understood not as just a precursor to the enlightenment of the 18th century, but as an inverse enlightenment, a turbid and troubled enlightenment beneath the enlightenment, before and before the enlightenment, a subjoined, unruly, queer enlightenment? If, alongside the great showdowns between the scholastic precursors of enlightenment and the propagandist precursors of counter-enlightenment, of crusade and holy war, a very different line came into view, the fragile individual line of translation in all directions, of beguinic disjointure, of mystical excess, of the return of an enlightenment out of joint. What if Kant's inferior vanguard did not desire the emergence from self-incurred immaturity, but an exit from the self as permanent self-appropriation and self-government, Unmund as temporally and socially overflowing minority, eternal becoming minor and mutual indebtedness? Unmund means to refuse patriarchal protection, government, control, and to do so from both sides of the Mund, the Manus, the sovereign paternal hand. It means to subjoin a dissemblage, a blurred multitude, a non-conformist swarm to this violence, which goes hand in hand with isolation and obedience. Such a swarm is impatiently patient, dispersed and intangible, only ever passing through. It's Unmundigkeit, writes Fred Moten, translated as minority or immaturity, is more literally unprotectedness, or perhaps what it is to be ungoverned, as what is out of hand or unhanded, as the Spiller's Echo anticipates this, in having been handed, not in hand, not in good hands, ungrasped, unowned, passed around. Escaping from the father's Mund, from the slaveholder's hand, from his protection, which is dominion, and yet remaining underage, unwilling and unable to be of age, always remaining before and before the Vormund, the guardian, staying immature, unappropriated and unappropriatable, unfit for all property, satisfied with use, occupation, and inhabitation, falling and still falling, unsettleable, unsettled, not possessing even oneself, but possessed by many, by the improper ghosts, by the voice mates in Unmund. To become minor is to fall into this multiplicity, into this world of things, unprotected, without paternal protection, vulnerable, fragile, but not alone. Into a world in which things do not show themselves to us, but mutual showing constitutes the world, mutual seeing, mutual knowing. Everything looks at everything, writes Clarisse Lispector in The Passion According to G.H. Everything lives the other. In this desert, things know things. The other side of reification is becoming thing, transmutation, which never arrives at the being thing in reification, always continuing to transform as becoming minor, becoming similar, or becoming nothing, minor embracing with the things. And Fred Moten asks further, what is the relation of fallenness and minority? What does it mean for nothingness to have fallen into the world of things, to have fallen into a state of radical inauthenticity, insofar as our talk is idle and our relation to things is one in which we do not grasp them, as if their showing is, in the first instance, not for us, as if, instead, world was always being reconstituted as a mutual showing? Moten formulates these questions to the ghost of Immanuel Kant, who simultaneously sees and is determined not to see, the Ausgang in what is enlightenment, the general gift, the consent of the ones who are out of hand, unowned, ungrasped, fallen, falling. Majority is based on self-seclusion and on renouncing mutual giving and the dissemblage's consent. The autonomous and sovereign subject who can emancipate from the Mund by creating his own Mund power is based on the devaluation and exclusion of everything that is minor, not human, not white, not male. Against this backdrop, Fred Bowen turns Kant's self-incurred minority around and around until indebtedness and immaturity can only be interpreted as mutual indebtedness, as queer, more than human bracing of dissemblages. In order not to fly off the handle, not to have his hand or head fly off in some anti or anti-analytic transversal and retraversal of every Königsberg bridge, Kant pulls back from the general impropriety, but he also gestures towards or opens onto the dark time or black time of the Enlightenment's common underground, the double edge of the fact that modern times have only ever been dark. This long temps of darkness and its black light, its open and general obscurity, is seen by everybody but the overseer in his blindness. Nina Simone's and Gilles Deleuze's imminent hell down here, Stefan and Stefano's and Stephen's noctambulism, Clarice Lispector's cockroach eclipse, all persistent turbidity of Donna Haraway's trouble, those in the dark one does not see. And if artificial illumination falls on things that have their place in the shadows, they step into a false light. The sharp eye of the Enlightenment wants to recognize, and it sees nothingness when it looks into the darkness that subjoins it. The darkness of the modern age is the subjuncture of the Enlightenment. Its joints and disjointures emerge in a queer middle age, and with them the dissemblage emerges. Unfugug. Fuck. Ungefuge. High German, Ungefugi, in Middle High German, Ungewog, stands for something naughty, inopportune, awkward, cloddish. Here dissemblage is already not only Ungefug, disassemblage and disobedience, not only negation of technical and moral fitting, joining and disposability, but something positively monstrous, outrageous, hulking, explosive force of the tremendously big and the infinitely small, in mu and in nu. Not formless and shapeless abyss, undivided one, but divisible, divided, folded multitude. The dissemblage is not negation of the assemblage. It is before and before assembling and joining, individual division, multiplicity. It is always already divided and composed, fractures and bonds, gaps and seams. It is composed of different parts, parts of things, machines, ghosts, humans, animals, and these parts can never be put together completely. They join in unwillingness, are never well joined, never whole, never complete. If the joints expand, the dissemblage can widely disperse, still brace the most distant. The dissemblage is unruly, non-conforming outwardly and inwardly. The things that constitute it need not conform, align, conjoined. Disjoined in underworlds, unearthly, the dissemblage drifts in turbidity. There it lets itself drift and stays with the individual trouble. How can the dissemblage evade unification, completion, totalization, becoming a folk, a closed and self-contained community, a fascistoid machine, a mob of Wutburger? There is no general antidote against the imminent capture of the dissemblage by state apparatuses, nor against its unification in the community form. And even when it comes today to forms of individual and collective disobedience, turned into open hate speech and hate campaigns, there can be no universal rules or ready-made recipes once and for all. Yet again, the three components of Gilbert's concept individuum, aligned against identity, substance, and individuality, can serve as conceptual machines: similarity, subsistence, individuality.
And with it, the windy, wendy, windish kin. Then the wind comes in, and with it, the windy, wendy, windish kin. Then the wind comes in, and with it, the windy, wendy, then the wind comes in, and with it, the windy, wendy, windish kin. With it, the windy, wendy, then the wind comes in, and with it, the windy, wendy, windish kin. Then the wind comes in, and with it, the windy, wendy, windish kin. Then the wind comes in, and with it, the windy, wendy, windish kin. Then the wind comes in, the wind comes, and with it, the windy, wendy, windish kin. With the windy, wendy, the windish kin. Then the wind comes in, wind comes in. With the windy, wendy, windish kin. Then the wind comes in. With the windy, wendy, windish kin. Then the wind comes in, the wind comes in. With the windy, wendy, windish kin. Then the wind comes in. And with it, the windy, wendy, then the wind comes in, then the wind comes in. With it, the windy, wendy, with it, the windy, wendy, windish kin. Then the wind comes in, and with it, the windy, wendy, windish kin. Then the wind comes in.
These conceptual machines join with minor voices and falsetto shallows, indices of a queer masculinity that does not conjoin with the impositions of fathers and brothers, renegade from sovereignty and appropriation, uncomfortable to the standard measure, to the ignorant who does not know because they are disinterested, to the empathy-less who can afford their lack of compassion, to the one-eyed who see nothing because they are incapable of recognizing, let alone differentiating, the non-normalized, to the secure who are secure because they are limited to themselves, and carefree because they know no care. "Man, who is this they you talking so much about?" somebody asks the veteran, the voice of wisdom in Ralph Ellison's Invisible Man, who was interned in an asylum for the semi-insane. And he replies, "They? Why, the same they always mean. The white folks, authority, the gods, fate, circumstances. The force that pulls your strings until you refuse to be pulled anymore. The big man who's never there where you think he is. Never arriving at that standard measure. Never becoming a real man. Never becoming a great man. Never becoming real big. Never of age. Never really white. Before and before the Vormund, the guardian, lies the Unmund of minor masculinity. A life in falsetto. In the socio-poetry of the falsetto, the minor voice withdraws from the majority that is inflicted upon it, into which it is enjoined and conjoined, into which it no longer wants to join. The minor voice is minor in the sense that it does not simply fit into the numbering logic of majority and minority, and that it defects from the paternal divine of logarithmic enjoinings, disposable only to the innumerable multitude. The minor voice is not a diminished, inhabited, reduced voice. It lets itself drift in the excess of the subjuncture of which it is a part, in the noise of the ground around and in the songs of the things in the surround. It lets itself fall apart rather than fall down. If Unmund means refusing patriarchal protection from both sides of Mund power, then minor masculinity not only refuses to be major, but also transforms the aspect of patriarchal protection giving, governing, controlling into something else. Queer minor masculinity immaturely cares for individual desire instead of satisfying interests and needs. Care, sweetness, softness are not character traits or gift packages, but mutual machines. Multiplicity of care relations, care in the plural. Fragile, fugitive falsetto, leaning back in becoming minor, sinking into multiplicity. Its Unmund is the disjointure that lets its voice become minor, refusing government and self-government, disjoining the self, and that lets it become more in the composition of the dissemblages.
Ein Leben im
When the self disjoins into nothingness, it does not dissolve into God, the divine love, the Holy Spirit, but lets itself fall into the manifold multitude, all disposable dissemblage. Selves out of joint, machinic disjoining, ever new variants of windy songs, pet tunes, favorite voices. Their whispers sometimes make no sense, no matter how closely we listen. Kindred souls do not speak one language. Hypophonal choirs, a signifying music. All native language is pervaded by minor voices, many tongues, unruly winds. No blood and soil, mono and homolinguality. Blown away descendants, according to Donna Haraway, when she thinks about odd kin and seed dispersing generations. Drifty kin, braced kin, soulmates, Aname, made kin by an unruly wind. never wanting to be Slovenian, never arriving in the Slovenian. Becoming Slovenian, yes, but never wanting to have the Slovenian, never wanting to possess it, never wanting to appropriate it, to capture it. Even if one believes to possess something of it, to interpret this possession as an obsession, an occupation, a poor possession, out of joint, in the joints, lurking for the joints. Then the wind comes in, and with it the windy, wendy, windish kin. Becoming Slovene without a word of Slovene? In a letter to Gershom Scholem, Walter Benjamin writes about the translation of his Berlin childhood around 1900 into French. The translator does not know a word of German. The technique with which we proceed is, as you can imagine, not of cardboard. What emerges, however, is almost consistently excellent. Becoming windish without a word of windish, but not without wind, not without wending, not without transmutation. Unruly wind, which makes the assemblage of wends and windish become intangible, void as in the Greek animolios, windy as that which cannot be captured. From the points of view of the linguistic standard measure, the wends stood for the unknown, not exactly identifiable vernaculars, Slavs. Analogously, until the 19th century, windish was used as a German synonym for Slavic, later for Slovene, and increasingly as subordinate, small peasant, rural, backward, in contrast to the dominant German language of the bourgeois upper class. In the 20th century, it narrowed ideologically to those willing to assimilate, the German-friendly, homeland-loyal Slovenes. This development can be described as a split of the Slovene minority into loyalty and betrayal, assimilated Windish and Yugoslavia-oriented Carinthian Slovenes. From both sides of the split, Windish can pejoratively signify agile and windy in the sense of opportunistic adaption, but can also refer to the limbo, the escape from the opposition of Slavic and Germanic, in which the Windish remains in the murk, in the joints. Not a simple hybridization, not a mixed language, but a line of flight, a continuum of transformation. This is what Benjamin called the practice of translation in an early essay. This is how the best musicians spoke Slovenian or Windish or Sinti with each other, or switched without circumstance or transition between the minor languages and the dominant language. When their improvisations pushed the production of desire in the uni club and the comm center, combined with the softness and care of the hippie latecomers, when jazz was not the sound of dead jellyfish but a pulsating social machine, a desired machine that braces music and social struggles. The sounds, the rumbles, the row were audible in the 1970s in different ways. As outside of capitalism on the other side of the Lubel Pass, as possibility of a communist worker self-management, echoed in the minor voices on this side of the Lubel and their minoritarian struggles. With this, the old meaning of Windish as twisted, strange, disorderly always resonated. Windish like a leaflet in the wind, a subjectivation traversing all dichotomies, a freshening wind, a storm blowing through the joints. I'm sorry.
Die Türe sang nach Mitternacht vom Neuanfang. Bin aufgewacht, lass dich nicht ein, auf Sehers Macht, auf was im Kommen sei. Und die Stimmen der Betroffenen schwingen sich auf zu Zukunftsoffenem. Trunken nüchtern die Besoffenen, Bierdosen rollen vorbei. Wege schwind, viel Wind hinein, vergiss die Fügung in ein Eins. An jeder Tür soll eine Fuge sein, so kommt der Wind herein. Wir fragten nach Zeichen, sie wurden gesandt, aus Geburt wurden Leichen, Hochzeiten verbrannt. Doch das Bild der Vergangenheit hat keinen Bestand, es huscht vorbei. Ungefügige Türen im Wind singen windige Lieder das himmlische Kind. Die Zeit steht ein, wenn wir unruhig sind und aus der Reihe. Wege schwind viel Wind hinein, vergiss die Fügung in ein Eins. An jeder Tür sollen viele Fugen sein, so kommt der Wind herein. Füg die Teile zusammen und es macht sie nicht ganz. Blas ihnen den Marsch, bleibst doch nur Ordonnanz. Alle liebenden Herzen erscheinen zum Tanz und sie ziehen vorbei. Wege schwind viel Wind hinein, vergiss die Fügung in ein Eins. An jeder Tür soll eine Fuge sein. Da kommt die Liebe rein. An jeder Tür soll eine Fuge sein. So kommt der Wind herein. Wind herein. Wind herein. I'm not afraid of the dark.